think Trump just stands in a very long line of culture warriors who want to exclude Catholics from the American family, who want to exclude Mormons from the American family.
Stephen Prothrow is a historian of American religion. His book is Why Liberals Win the Culture Wars Even When They Lose Elections. First of all, how do you define culture war? What is a culture war? And who are these conservatives and liberals we're talking about?
Yeah, okay, good. So a culture war, as I understand it, is a sort of pitched battle with a lot of militaristic rhetoric that's about moral, religious, and cultural questions that touches on the meaning of America. So it can't be just sort of an easygoing disagreement among friends about something, right? It has to have a sense of something really powerful at stake, and typically both sides in a culture war are going to denounce the other as un-American or as even treasonous or something like that. So that's what culture war is. And then the liberal conservative is tricky, because I do argue that you can track liberals and conservatives from around 1800, when my book gets going, until the contemporary times. But of course, those terms change, right? So, you know, you have conservatives who are on one side of an issue, you know, early on, and then they end up being on another side of an issue later. But both sides have this righteous minority kind of feeling that fuels the culture wars from both the left and the right. But the vast majority of culture warriors, and the most pitched of them, are on the conservative side.
So why are liberals always the winners? Is there something inherently socially liberal about the United States?
Well, when I started working on this book, I actually started thinking about it with the Ground Zero Mosque controversy a few years ago, where was this Muslim guy who owned this property going to be able to build an Islamic community center near Ground Zero? And I was really surprised that conservatives were sort of lining up against this issue, where it would seem like, you know, religious liberty, private property rights, these are sort of standard conservative things. Like, why would they be opposed? So I started looking back in American history for prior culture wars, and then as I was researching them, I was surprised. I mean, as a historian of religion, I didn't really know this. I was like, this is weird. The liberals are winning all these. You sort of, in my head, I was thinking, well, these are battles kind of evenly fought, and like two equal teams on a football field or something, where on any given day one might win and the other might lose. But it just seemed like the liberals kept coming on the winning side. And I think there is a way in which the liberal side on cultural questions, that does have the Constitution largely on its side, right? It has the Bill of Rights on its side in terms of, you know, liberty for this, liberty for that. And typically the culture wars are efforts to restrict our liberty rather than to expand our liberty. So I think that that's part of it. But I think the bigger reason why liberals win is because conservatives just pick losing causes.
Why do they do that? Why would anyone pick a political fight that is on the losing side?
Well, to me, conservatism from the beginning of American culture has always been as cultural as it is economic. And on the cultural side of conservatism, there's always been this sense of loss, like something's being lost here. And very early on, it was the sort of looming danger of the French Revolution that might somehow take away stability from American culture. But throughout American history, there's been sort of a series of sense of losses that conservatives have perceived, like the loss of Christian America, or the loss of white control, or the loss of patriarchy, or the loss of the traditional family, whatever it might be. They attach to issues where their constituents, their cultural conservatives who listen to them, are going to say, yeah, that's right, you know, that makes me worried, that makes me fearful, I'm afraid of that like you are, you know, in the elections today. So much of what's going on in the Republican primaries is about trying to make us fearful, right? These Mexicans are coming across the border, these terrorists are going to come and blow us up, right? And so they pick these issues where there's a sort of a palpable sense of fear and anxiety, and the reason there is a palpable sense of fear and anxiety is because that issue's already going the other way, right? Why worry about these gay people getting married when there's five gay people in America, or when no gay people want to get married, right? It's when gay people start to be more visible in the society, when they're starting to push for their own freedom to marry, that you start to get agitated about that. And by the time that's happening, the issue's already kind of going the liberal direction.
Would it be smart from a winning perspective for conservatives to say, to read your book, first of all, and then to say, wait a minute, we should look at the culture wars from a positive way instead of putting this losing, downbeat sort of spin on it.
So President Obama ran, of course, on, you know, hope campaign, you know, yes, we can campaign. And this election cycle really is running on a fear, on the fear side, particularly on the Republican side. And you see that with someone like Marco Rubio, who really started with a hope campaign, like, I'm the young guy, I'm the sort of the guy who's going to bring Hispanics into this, you know, party that seems to have gone over to the white side in the past. But as so many of the voters in the Republican primaries are seemingly being drawn to Cruz and to Trump and to the sort of the danger, the fear, the anxiety side, he's heading that way too. So I think they're going that way because it works, because that's what matches the culture war narrative and the culture war rhetoric, and the culture wars work.
Trump's anti-immigration rhetoric has really been turned up over the last few months, saying specifically, you know, talking about barring immigration specifically against Muslims or Syrian refugees. And it's being treated almost as a new phenomenon in the United States. But you seem to argue just the opposite, that Trump's arguments go way, way back in American history, because this is a particularly, the culture wars is a particularly American thing.
I don't think Trump is unprecedented. And I think we sort of flatter ourselves, those of us who are who feel nervous about Trumpism. You know, we flatter ourselves by imagining this is just this outlier. But I think Trump just stands in a very long line of culture warriors who want to exclude Catholics from the American family, who want to exclude Mormons from the American family, and in his case, want to exclude Muslims from the American family. We have a long history of culture warfare over immigration. The anti-immigration acts of the 1920s were efforts to get rid of Chinese and Japanese immigration, because the idea was we could never possibly assimilate these yellow people into white America. So there's deep veins there of anxiety and fear about people who don't look like us that he's tapping into. And I think what's different about Trump is that he's so brazen about it, and he's so upfront about it, and we're not getting, you know, code words and dog whistles. We're just getting very explicit what appears to be, you know, chauvinistic and exclusivist and even racist language.
Yeah, and his whole slogan, right, make America great again, right, that plays into the whole notion of loss that you were talking about earlier.
That's right. I mean, I think his campaign is sort of, you know, we America has been schlonged, you know, but it will be great again. You know, it's this narrative of loss and recovery. Something's been taken away from us, and the presumed us there is sort of white men who are older, who have a sense of the world slipping away from them as the country is becoming browner, as women are making their way into the workforce, as the homes and families are becoming more egalitarian, as religions other than Christianity are becoming visible in American public culture.
All those changes you mentioned strike me as very positive things in American history. And I'm wondering, why do conservatives look back 20, 30, 40, 50 years and say, oh, things were better then?
Because they have a different vision of America than your vision. Because for them, liberty is not as important. And on the cultural conservative side of republicanism and conservatism is this idea that you want to protect the hometown, you want to protect the family. You know, you want to close ranks around traditional values. You want to oppose moral relativism. You know, you want to save the lives of innocent children and the unborn. Right. So those values sometimes work with liberty values, but sometimes they work against libertarian values.
Politics and the Bible, for example, does not really get mentioned in the same breath in, say, England, for example. It's always a personal issue for politicians. Whereas in the United States, right, you must absolutely talk about prayer and your personal commitments, your personal religious commitments, if you're going to be a politician at any high up level. Does the Bible have that kind of place? Should it have that kind of place in American political discourse?
Away from the should question first, it always has. I mean, except for maybe at the very beginning, because the beginning of the United States was really dominated by these deist types who really weren't all, they certainly weren't evangelicals, and they weren't particularly Christian, many of them. So there was a sort of, maybe from your perspective, a kind of brief shining moment, you know, when religion just wasn't that much a part of our public culture, but pretty soon it was central. And we've always had this unresolved issue. We've had the unresolved issue of race, and we've had the unresolved issue of religion throughout American history. And the culture wars are in part an effort to resolve what the founders didn't resolve, because they did not strictly separate church and state. They sort of separated church and state, but they allowed for military chaplains, and they allowed for prayers before, you know, the Supreme Court, and they allowed for prayers before the opening of the U.S. Congress. And, You know, they allowed for presidents to declare fast days and days of Thanksgiving. So we've always had this sort of overlay of kind of vaguely Christian piety that you don't have in public culture in Europe, where to talk about Jesus while you're running for prime minister is to be laughed off the stage and not to get any votes.
And are the culture wars in some way a part of what the American identity is? Part of that working through the fact that our founders didn't specify it maybe hard enough? That helps to shape the American identity.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something in American identity that is, we are a special project for God. Most Americans have believed that throughout American history. You know, and you see, I mean, Lincoln is kind of a hero of mine, but Lincoln believes that too. You know, when he's wrestling in his second inaugural address for the Civil War, and he's saying, you know what, you know, I know there's a God, I know God is in charge of history, and therefore God could end the Civil War, but God is not ending the Civil War. What the hell is going on? You know, and you see him wrestling in that amazing speech with that. And finally he says, you know, look, we don't understand what's going on here. You know, I am a big fan of the people who don't understand what God is doing, because the people who do understand what God is doing seem to me the people who are most dangerous in not only American history, but in world history. But that said, I think most Americans have had a sense that the U.S. is a kind of religious project. And in that sense, really secular libertarians who want to say, you know, that the public space should be totally stripped of religious conversation, those people are really fighting an uphill battle.
So that's an area where liberals don't always win, right? They're fighting this uphill battle.
Well, that is interesting. And I say that at the end of why liberals win. I say that you know, conservatives lose all the culture wars, liberals win all the culture wars. And I say, but wait a minute, there are a few things in the contemporary culture wars that conservatives have won. And one of them is to keep religion in the public space. So you know, at least not all liberals have this view, but many liberals would like to see, and certainly the classic Democratic Party position has been that church and state should be separate. And that, as Thomas Jefferson was attacked in the election of 1800, that I write about in the book, for his religion. But he didn't respond in public. Why? Because he said, religion's a private matter. It shouldn't be a part of elections. You know, I think we'd be better if we were more Jeffersonian in that regard. But the Democratic Party has capitulated on that. You know, after John Kerry lost the presidential election, one of the postmortems was, you know, he wasn't good about talking about his faith. He wasn't good about talking about himself as a Catholic. He sounded like someone who really didn't have a relationship with Jesus. That was a problem in that election.
Yeah.
And if he had been able to emote a little more about his Catholicity, you know, he might have been elected president. So we now have two religious political parties. We don't just have one, we have two. And so that argument has, for now, been lost, the argument that the public square should be secular.
You have questioned Trump's sincerity in the area of religion.
I do, because, I mean, I just think, and as I would Ronald Reagan's, or as I would anyone who really doesn't go to church and all of a sudden they get religion when they're running for president.
So why do evangelicals seem to love Donald Trump? I went to the Values Voters Summit here in D.C. a few months ago, and Donald Trump held up his personal Bible aloft, and the crowd went wild. They loved it. They couldn't get enough of him. And they were less interested in a lot of the other traditional candidates, the more establishment candidates. And here's a guy who's a gambling magnate, right? A gambling tycoon, twice divorced. What's going on?
For me, the short answer is that one effect of the culture wars has been to make political identity the central identity in American public life. And for much of American public life, your central identity has been your religious identity. I don't think that's true anymore. I think that now your central identity is, are you a liberal, are you a conservative, are you a Democrat, are you a Republican? So as the culture wars have driven political polarization, and as the parties have become more and more pure, right, fewer and fewer moderates in the Republican Party, fewer and fewer liberals in the Republican Party, same in the Democratic Party, which is becoming more purely, you know, liberal, center-left. As that's happened, the political identity has become really central. So I would argue that what's happening with evangelical support for Trump is they've forgotten how to be evangelicals, and they've become Republicans. I argued the same when I was talking about the Ground Zero controversy, and I saw so few Mormons come to the defense on religious liberty grounds of Muslims, which I couldn't believe, because Mormons are the most persecuted religious minority in American history. How could they possibly join in the, you know, the gang fight against Muslims? And yet they were on the Ground Zero mosque controversy, and I argued that they were forgetting to be Mormons, and they had become Republicans first. And I think that's what's happened with evangelicals. I think that they read the Republican Party platform first, and they read the Bible second.
And so I'm trying to think of ways we would actually diffuse a lot of these culture wars.
I'm kind of a traditionalist about this. I mean, I think we need to go back to religious liberty, back to the First Amendment, back to this idea that that our country isn't simply two warring political parties, right? Our country is a bunch of citizens who are trying to do things together in our public spaces. And I think that tradition, which I have referred to as the great tradition of conciliation in the United States, this tradition that argues for a kind of civility in our public debates, that argues for a sense of our awareness as Americans rather than our sense of awareness as Republicans or as Democrats, you know, that is sort of failing. And that's been one of the victims of the contemporary culture wars. But I think that could be revived. And then the other thing is that the hopeful piece in the book is that these culture wars do end. It's not like they go on forever, right? So even though the culture wars seem to go on forever, we keep getting new cultural battles inside them, right? So I think there's reason to believe that the Islam wars that we're in right now, you know, probably won't be happening in 50 years. You know, the gay rights issue is basically settled. In 5 years, it'll be gone. Republicans aren't going to be complaining about it in 5 years because it would be just stupid to do that. So there is some hope that these things do finally end. And then the values that the liberals have pushed in these wars become just sort of American values rather than, you know, Democratic Party values.
So last year in Indiana, when gay people were, I believe, denied service at a restaurant, you came out supporting religious freedom.
I think that there's ways that we can have both religious freedom and gay rights, but that requires some kind of accommodation in the public space on both sides. And right now, because the gay rights side is winning, it's really not eager to make those accommodations. But you know, when you do, when you care about religious liberty, sometimes the religious liberty is on behalf of minorities, and sometimes it's on behalf of majorities. But
in your view, the principle holds the same, whether it's the majority or the minority?
The whole point of religious liberty protection is that any libertarian protection is that they apply even when we find the person's views or actions disgusting, right? And in fact, if they don't apply then they're non-starters, right? I mean, I'm in favor of the rights of, you know, the Westboro Baptist Church to scream out, you know, God hates fags, wherever they want to scream that out. Like, that's their freedom. That's the kind of country I want to live in, you know, rather than a country that tells them that they're not allowed to say that because it's an abhorrent view.
Stephen Prothero is the author. The book is Why Liberals Win the Culture Wars Even When They Lose Elections. Stephen, it's great to have you here. For Reason TV, I'm Todd Cranin.